how did, I guess it's whoever jumped in first, right?
Are you recording too?
Yes.
Oh, I see that. Yeah, you are.
Yeah. I learn something new every day. So anyway, purely by chance, I mean, I on the spur of the moment wrote a thing called the 75-inch revolution, which I'll describe a little bit more in a second. But then on the heels of that, Dennis wrote a thing on HBO Max, and its progression over the past years from the Game of Thrones debacle to the present. What's interesting is they ended up having a decent amount of common ground. And one of the things is they both talked about things that have played out in the past 2 years. And so that's what I'm going to mainly talk about today. And my thing was about the fact that, because I've seen plenty of evidence of this, the standard for TV screens now is 75 inches. That's what everybody wants. That's what everybody's buying. And a lot of these sets are capable of reference quality playback, even if the owners don't know it. So that's never happened before. And the other thing that is common now is 4K streaming, which again, if you do it properly, means there's a potential for a lot of people to have a better than movie theater experience at home now, which has never happened before. So I wanted to talk about that and the ramifications of that, but then also Dennis, you know, explain where you went with your piece.
Yeah. I mean, I think one of the caveats that we need to lay down right off the bat is that HBO Max is not the same service that was responsible for the Game of Thrones brouhaha. That was HBO Go, which doesn't exist anymore. And I know it's confusing for a lot of people, and it caused a lot of consternation when the apps launched. But yeah, I mean, just rolling back the clock, it was, what did we figure, Mike? It was 2 years ago?
2 years ago, pretty much.
When everybody was like, this sucks, I can't watch it, it's terrible. And Game of Thrones, one of these crucial episodes of the final seasons, just looked like hot garbage. And that prompted a lot of discussion about how bad streaming sucks, which, you know, we sort of dissected that at the time. And it's like, well, you know, there are issues with codecs, there are issues with servers and things like that. But yeah, fast forward 2 years, and I watched this new Angelina Jolie movie on HBO Max, Those Who Wish Me Dead, and I'm looking at the scene, and there's this raging inferno burning through a forest. And as a video nerd, I'm thinking to myself, that had to be a nightmare to encode, and it's got to be a nightmare to decode. There's a lot of chaos in the image, and these high efficiency video codecs don't do well with chaos. They do well with predictability and reliability and things that they can understand. And when you're talking about a raging inferno burning through a forest, that is a recipe for video disaster. And yes, I'm looking at this and going, well, from my seating position, this kind of looks perfect, but where does it break down? How close do I have to get to the screen before I'm like, oh, I can start to see the flaws here. I can start to see those hiccups that are caused by the higher efficiency encoding, the lower bit rate, if you will. And I got halfway to the screen and I'm like, this still looks perfect. Approached a little closer. This still looks perfect. I got to the point to where I could not see the edges of the screen, right? I am at a completely unreasonable seating distance at this point, and the image still looked perfect. And to me, there's just something sort of fascinating about the fact that HBO, which granted, different services, that's okay, HBO Go versus HBO Max, but a lot of people just think of it as HBO Go. HBO Go has gone from being the laughingstock of the streaming world to delivering what I would consider to be a truly reference quality image via its streaming service. And I think that's indicative of the fact that these services are just getting better and better all the time.
Okay,
I think the only thing I would
jump in on that is it's still worth noting that HBO Max has very little content in 4K HDR.
Correct.
In fact, I mean, to my knowledge, it's only their kind of, you know, this year's studio releases, which, yeah. I mean, is probably what, under six titles?
Yeah.
So, I mean, it's not totally fair to call them a reference quality movie service, you know, when you have, you know, probably 1/10 of 1% of your content there in the best quality.
No, you're right. I brought that up in the story. Yeah, it's but the thing is, the potential is there. They proved
well,
that.
Well, it's not even a potential thing. The thing is, that in certain instances, they're there.
Yeah.
You know, and to me, that's the important thing is they may not have a full catalog of it yet, but streaming has reached the point where that's a possibility.
Yeah, that's a good point.
And the other thing is, because you were talking about Disney Plus, the number of services capable of achieving that has gone up in the past 2 years.
Yeah, I mean, I have seen what I would consider to be reference quality video in the past 6 months on Disney Plus, on HBO Max, rare, true, but there, Apple TV Plus, and Netflix. I have seen video presentations on all four of those services that I just don't think anyone could take any issue with at any reasonable seating distance on any screen, as long as they've got the right setup and the right hardware and everything like that.
And you were talking earlier about even the HD content on Disney Plus.
Correct. Yeah. My wife sort of got onto me because I'd never seen Sleeping Beauty before. And I know there are a lot of listeners right now who are shocked and appalled, but whatever. We loaded up on Disney Plus, and I was a little disappointed to see that it's not in 4K because that film was distributed in 70 millimeters, so it's prime candidate for 4K restoration, but it was just HD, and I thought, whatever, just the point is to see the movie. I was blown away by the image, just utterly blown away. And after the fact, I thought, well, you know, I'm going to compare this to the Blu-ray to see what might have been missing in Disney Plus's HD stream. Couldn't see any meaningful differences between the two, you know. And I think I've at many times in the past on Cinelux and at other places said, yeah, 4K streaming is great, HD streaming, not so much. Well, here we are with Disney Plus, and they're doing HD streaming right. And given the fact that so much of what we have at our fingertips to view is still in HD, not in 4K, I think that's significant. I think that makes streaming viable across the board.
But didn't you say even Netflix HD presentation's gotten better?
They've gotten a lot better. Yeah. A lot better. Yeah.
But the one service that still sucks is Amazon.
That's, well, you know, they can do 4K HDR pretty well, but they can't do HD to save their lives.
Yeah.
So, and you know, Mike, you and I have been talking a lot about Criterion Channel lately, because I think you and I both want Criterion Channel to rock. Like, you and I both have a deep need to get into that service and dig into their catalog. I signed up when they first launched and I was like, this is not acceptable. I signed up again last week, watched it a bit, decided, no, this is still not acceptable. So yeah, we're not making universal claims here. We're not saying, hey, streaming is great across the board. We're just saying it's getting a lot better. And in many cases, it can deliver a AV experience that is way better than what you're going to get down at your local IMAX.
John, how about your experience?
Well, I don't think I do nearly as much streaming as Dennis does. I mean, most of what we watch is really content that's downloaded from Kaleidoscape Store, which is, you know, in the best quality. Or we're watching, you know, things that we're not really super caring about the video quality. We've been rewatching Lost with my 14-year-old, which, I mean, is literally in DVD quality. It's the versions of discs that I had. But I echo, you know, Dennis's comments. I do think that Amazon is noticeably, when I'm watching something and I'm kind of pulled out of the content because of issues, it's almost always on Amazon.
Yeah.
And it seems like, especially, I mean, we're watching newer things on Disney Plus, not so much going back through catalog stuff. And most Disney Plus has been great about their new stuff being in 4K HDR. I'm almost never pulled out of the picture or the experience because of any issues on Disney Plus. And, you know, really about all we watch on HBO Max is their new stuff, which is in, you know, 4K HDR.
Yeah.
Mike, do you mind if I glom onto something that Siaka just said?
No, go ahead.
I think he just made the whole point. John, you're talking about being pulled out of the experience. You're talking about distraction. And I think that's the thing that we need to talk about, because that's the whole point. You know, we can get into, you know, pixel counting and all of this, and if you pause the frame, oh, maybe you can see that the backgrounds are a little whatever. But does any of that at the end of the day really matter? What matters is, am I being met with distractions? Am I being met with things that take me out of the experience? And I think that's what we need to be talking about, instead of talking about whatever artifacts or whatever problems there may be
I think there's a valid conversation to be had that streaming has been dumped on for so long, and that it can, in your experience, achieve a reference quality playback. So that it shouldn't just be disparaged as a format, it's how it's implemented, as opposed to what the technology can do right now.
We need to be talking about specifics. We need to be talking about service. Are you talking about, when you say streaming, you're talking Netflix or you're talking Hulu? Because one of them has proven itself capable of delivering nigh perfection, and the other one almost universally looks like trash, right? So we need to talk about service, and we need to talk about hardware. I have way more streaming media players than anyone needs. And I have to tell you, on Roku, I can count on the best streaming experience I can get. On NVIDIA Shield, mostly true as well. You know, it's 95% of the way there. Apple TV, I'm sorry, it's still problematic. It's not a great HEVC decoder. And HEVC is the codec that's used to deliver 4K HDR. And that's always the question I ask when people say, oh, I have this issue with streaming or that issue with streaming or whatever. Okay, what service are you talking about and what device? Mm-hmm. And God, are you talking about the apps built into your TV? Because in my experience, a lot of those really deliver subpar video where I can watch the same thing on Roku and it's nearly perfect. So
I would say, I mean, so far we've been talking all about picture quality. When I notice something and I'm disappointed, it's generally the sound is a lot less dynamic than what I would expect. And then kind of what Dennis said, I mean, my primary streaming player is an Apple TV. And I think that I guess I'm unclear whether the sound that I'm getting is due to Apple TV and something that it's limited by or the stream itself. But anything that I'm watching, it seems like across almost all streaming services, primarily HBO Max and Disney Plus, and we watched something last night on Hulu, I have to turn it significantly louder and it always sounds very compressed compared to a movie that I would watch off of a disc. And again, I don't know if that's because you're not getting the Dolby True HD signal, if it's because they're just compressing the heck out of the audio compared to something else, or if it's because of the Apple TV itself. But I'm far more, when I'm streaming something, my disappointment comes far more from the audio than it does the picture quality. And maybe I'm just mentally more forgiving of a bit of banding here or a bit of noise there than I am the audio being a lot more lackluster than I would expect it to be.
I've had issues on Apple TV with weak sauce audio. That, and I can flip over to my Roku and the problem's not there.
Yeah.
And the other thing is a lot of people don't know this can be in the settings. Sometimes there is an app by app dynamic range compression setting that you might have to toggle off or what have you. But yeah, it's hardware and service dependent again. You know, I think I mentioned this a while back that Dolby Labs did blind studies to sort of figure out where's the breaking point for Dolby Digital Plus. What they found was that at 768 kilobits a second, Dolby Digital Plus is perceptually transparent. You know, I think they had like a $30,000 speaker system. And at 768 kilobits a second, people couldn't tell the difference between Dolby Digital Plus and Dolby True HD. And that's what some of the streaming services are using now. Some have even moved over to AC4, which is, you know, even more efficient. So yeah, there's... When we're talking about all of this stuff, we have to hang caveats on it. Sometimes the hardware is the problem. Sometimes the service is the problem. Sometimes the setup is the problem. But yeah, that doesn't negate the fact that I've seen with my own eyes and heard with my own ears, there are cases where these streaming services are delivering truly unimpeachable presentations.
Dennis, you sort of ranked the streaming players before. How would you rank the services?
I would say Apple TV Plus is either first or on par with Disney Plus.
As long as it's not on an Apple 4K TV.
But that's correct. You know, I'm watching Apple TV Plus on my Roku. So Apple TV Plus is a service. There's not a lot on there that I want to watch. I think the best thing I've seen on Apple TV Plus was the Snoopy Show. But still, in terms of AV presentation, they've been really great and on par with or better than ever so slightly Disney Plus. And then I would say Netflix is next, then maybe HBO Max. Then you're getting down into Amazon territory. And from there, it's just kind of, and the rest, you know, it's, yeah. I mean, gosh, a lot of what I've seen on Hulu is, you know, fine for watching Grey's Anatomy, but I would never watch a film on Hulu, at least not one that I care about in terms of AV presentation. And then I'd put Criterion Channel somewhere under that.
Oh, that's sad. Okay.
Yeah.
Below Amazon?
Maybe on par with Amazon.
Okay.
I don't know. Look, I'm not saying it's bad. And I'm saying, you know, if you've got a 65-inch TV and you're sitting 10 feet away from it, you're probably going to be perfectly fine with it. But once you blow it up to cinematic proportions, it just doesn't hold up.
Yeah.
And I think people need to keep in mind that that is the context that we're talking about here. We are Cinelux. We are talking about cinematic proportions. We can talk all we want about screen sizes, but as I've said before, screen size doesn't tell you much. It's the screen size in relation to how far you're sitting mm-hmm. from it. It is how much of the field of view is the screen take. And when you get to cinematic proportions, whether you're, you know, got your nose in a 55-inch TV or you're 5 or 6 feet away from a 75-inch TV the way I am, yeah, that's when you really start to separate the wheat from the chaff in terms of these things.
Okay. And two thoughts simultaneously. Let me throw this out there, and I have no idea whether what I'm about to say is true or not, but given the way the streaming is progressing, mm-hmm. is there any reason to think in 3 to 5 years there'll be a reason to have any other home format?
I have two thoughts on that. Number one, it is only going to get better from here. I think we've sort of seen our last codec that is going to be developed for the physical media domain, right? HEVC, it's in terms of discs, we're never going to have another better codec. But, you know, when you talk about other codecs like AV1 and stuff that Netflix is working on, you know, I mean, we're not that far away. And I'm not talking about tomorrow, but just a few years down the road, the codec that Netflix is working on, they're promising a 100-fold increase in complexity. And just to put things in perspective, going from AVC, which is the codec that was used for HD streaming for years, to HEVC represented a 10-fold increase in complexity. Netflix is talking about a 100-fold increase. So they're talking about being able to deliver perceptually transparent 4K HDR at like 3-4 megabits a second. And once you get to that point, God, imagine what you can do with, 16 megabits a second is going to feel like just overkill, you know? So in terms of developing AV quality along that road, oh God, I'm super excited to see where we're going in the future. But, and this is a big but, you know, we've talked a lot about what has happened in the past year in terms of streaming and the advancements made. There have also been setbacks, you know, like in the UK, for example. I know they put a big cap on the bandwidth of streaming, and all of a sudden the video quality of Netflix and Disney Plus dropped. They've reversed that. And now, you know, if you watch Disney Plus in the UK, you're getting the same experience you were in the US. But that's sort of, you know, that's a thing we need to keep in the back of our heads. So the streaming giveth and the streaming taketh away. When you're talking about people with bandwidth caps, when you're talking about people without access to high quality internet connections and things like that. And when you're talking about government agencies basically being able to go to these people and say, hey, you can't stream at that high quality anymore for a while because everybody's living at home now and we're having a bandwidth crunch. It's complicated.
John, what do you make of all that?
Well, again, I think we've seen the end of a physical media. I don't think we're going to have another disc format.
No.
So what's left if that goes away? I mean, it is streaming.
Yeah, but what about 8K?
I think it'll be streaming. I mean, yes, 8K, 16K, 100K at some point, probably. But I mean, I think it's all going to be streaming because, you know, like Dennis said, it's going to keep developing the technology. Internet bandwidths are going to continue getting bigger and bigger. I mean, we have gigabit now here where we live. You know, I'm not sure what's going to be beyond that, but it'll come. History has just proven that technology is going to continue to develop. And as you push one envelope, they move something else forward to make room for the next thing. So I think streaming is going to certainly be the future, but I think what we'll have is, I think this, you know, continuing schism of how do I get content? You know, are we going to get to a point where everybody subscribes to 50 different things to watch what they want? And I think that's, I'm hoping there will, I don't know if that's something you can regulate or what you would do. Maybe they'll kind of come together in bundled packages, but Disney buys everything. But even still, when they buy it, they don't put it all, you know, it's not all on the same service anymore. You know, one of my favorite TV shows, you know, again, going back to, we watch a lot of broadcast TV, is called SEAL Team. It's on CBS. We love that show. And they just announced that it got picked up for next year, but it's going to move to Paramount Plus. And I mean, I love that show, but I'm not going to subscribe to a streaming service for that one thing. So I think streaming is the future, but I think it's not a great landscape for the consumer because, you know, we deal with customers all the time in our store. And, you know, for years, most of our customers were all cable or satellite. And now more and more of them are moving away from that, cutting the cord and asking us, you know, what should I go to? What do I do? But now what I'm hearing more and more is I'm right back to the same bill that I had before. And now I've got all these different services and I'm jumping around to try to find things. And it's not a great solution for the consumer. And, you know, what would be great is I guess if they could lump it all into one big pie, it's like, hey, look, everybody pays $150 a month to service provider X and they dole it out to everybody else and you just get everything. But, you know, every little person coming up with every little streaming thing for one little show here and there, I think that that's going to ultimately be detrimental to the market. But as far as the future, I mean, it clearly seems to be that's where it's going. It's cheaper for them to deliver. It's faster. You know, the other thing too is like they just, and you know, I'm sure Dennis knows much more than I do, but Disney Plus did a recolor correction on the last Star Wars movie. You can't do that on a physical disc. So now it's like if they want to make a change, you know, again, for better or for worse, you know, if something decides, hey, this guy is no longer acceptable to society, you know, whatever, they can make changes on the fly with streaming product. I think there's a lot of things that the studios and the providers like about streaming versus a physical media. And it's to me, that's definitely the future. And if we're not on complete parity today with a physical media, it's imminently going to happen.
Yeah. Siaka, have you seen The Mitchells versus the Machines?
I haven't.
Well, just in case you need a little background on this, I don't know if you read my review, but it's the new film that was produced by Lord and Miller, the guys who made Lego Movie and producers of Spider-Man Into the Spider-Verse. This is their new production, directed and written by a couple of guys who did Gravity Falls. It was supposed to be Sony Animation's big, you know, billion-dollar film for 2020. It was going to be last year's Into the Spider-Verse. And, well, we know what happened. Pandemic happened. And it led to an interesting conundrum for Sony because they're one of the few major studios who doesn't have their own streaming service, right? So what are they going to do with it? And there was some discussion of it going to Disney. And then from what I've heard, some of this is rumor and it should be taken as such. But Sony was like, hey, we don't want Disney owning everything. And they ended up selling it to Netflix. And so now it's just a Netflix exclusive. The funny thing is, though, that movie is so far up my alley, it's bumping up against the brick wall. I didn't know it existed, man. And I just started hearing rumors and rumblings of people talking about it. But it's funny to me to think of a world in which, you know, Sony had their own streaming service and the problem that you're talking about just got worse. But they didn't. And from what I've heard, they just consider it too late. They're like, no, people are tired of studios having their own services. Or we're not going to launch another one. But it points to an interesting future for what happens when every studio has their own streaming service, except for Sony. You know,
well, it probably makes Sony content really desirable because you can put it out for a bidding war to everybody else. But
I guess so.
And didn't they just sign some, Sony specifically signed some deal where things are going to either go to Netflix and then go to Disney or something like that. But
I don't know.
It is, though. I mean, like I said, it creates this schism. And to me, I'm not even sure the right word, but like, I guess subscription rage. I'm just done. I'm not going to buy anymore. And it's not even really about the money. I'm just not going to keep doing all these things. And, you know, you talk about nothing good to watch on Apple TV Plus. My wife and I loved Ted Lasso. I think it's one of the best new shows to come out in a long time. It was so great. But I'm not going to pay another $6, $9 a month to watch one show. I'm just not going to do it.
I think you're the person who coined the term peak subscription saturation.
I'm there.
Yeah. And hey, Amazon just bought MGM. That makes things even more interesting.
Yeah. So, I mean, I think that is the future, but I think that they're going to have to figure it out. It would be akin to we need a cable provider to aggregate all these things. We need someone to aggregate them all together instead of like, I have to pay ABC to watch ABC. I have to pay NBC to watch NBC. Yeah. I mean, again, it is distasteful as that idea might be. I think ultimately that would be better for the consumer to just say, hey, look, you pay us whatever the rate's going to be and you get them all. And we're going to put a search out, you know, where you can search across all the providers and just click to play. You don't have to download 20 different apps. You don't have to try to keep up with, you know, what's on what. You know, it's going to be super flicks. It's got everything. And you subscribe to one payment and you get it all. And I think people would I think people would probably be willing to pay a premium to not have to worry about, I can't watch something.
Yeah. Well, Dennis, do you have anything you want to say about that? Because I wanted to do a slight pivot.
No, pivot.
Okay. Because I wanted to talk about, because of the pandemic and because of what happened with streaming, we've had a taste of day and date now because of some of these services. And it didn't play out anywhere near how we anticipated it for years. The question is it going to stick in some form or is it going to go away? And do you see it going back to a theatrical release model and then a short window on the streaming? Disney and Plus in particular has had such success with this. I have a hard time believing that they're just going to abandon it, but I want to see what everybody thought.
Well, we know Warner's going to abandon it.
They said,
I mean, they've pretty much already said, you know, this is a 2021 thing. Back in 2022, things go back to normal just with a shorter window. I think they've negotiated with the theater owner mafia and they've agreed to, I think, a 45-day window or something like that. But I think you're right. I think if anybody's going to keep day and date around, it may be Disney.
Well, I think Warner got killed financially. I think, you know, so many people get HBO Max as part of their bundled cable package. I don't know how much actual subscription money this experiment has actually brought in for them. So, I mean, I think for them, this was a financial nightmare because they didn't get the revenue from the theaters and it didn't bring in all the subscribers they thought it was going to bring in. And a lot of their subscribers are just people that had it already that, you know, decided to sign up and use it. So I think that it will go to a much shortened window, you know, maybe a 30-day exclusive or whatever, like, you know, some of them have already signed. And Disney, like Dennis said, might end up being the hybrid, but I think it's in flux. And I think if you start seeing the theatrical numbers starting to be huge again, I think that the studios will pull back to that. Or maybe, you know, Disney will change it up again. It's like, oh, you know, it's expensive to watch it on day one, but we're going to open it up. We're not going to make you wait the whole 3 months to get it. You know, maybe after a month, it's half the price or, you know, whatever. But I think Disney has proven themselves incredibly adept at adjusting to the marketplace, more so than anybody else, really. Yeah. But I feel like they're probably watching it under a microscope with every release. And, you know, could we have made an extra dollar if we had pivoted one way or the other? But, you know, at the same token, as more people sign, as there's more subscribers, potential subscribers or actual subscribers, it might start to make more sense to work. Hey, the theater's not working for us anymore. We don't want the revenue sharing, or we're going to put it in the theater to appease the theater owners. But as they go from 100 million subscribers to 200 or 300 million, or, you know, whatever their potential is, now all of a sudden, you know, maybe you can do it for $20 and you get more people to sign up, and it's actually makes more money for them to do it that way. But I feel like it's still one of those things that's watched on a case-by-case basis super close.
Can you imagine a world where Disney is sort of doing its thing, but the other studios have to do more of the HBO Max model where they just literally can't afford to do day and date? But Disney,
well, Disney has kind of always done its thing.
Yeah, but they've never had so many studios under their umbrella, and they essentially own the tentpoles now.
It's hilarious to me to see the analysts try to keep up with Disney Plus, because, you know, they release their projections. We think this number of people is going to subscribe to Disney Plus, and then just Disney Plus just demolishes that number. So it's funny to me to watch the race now to see them predict when Disney Plus is going to have more subscribers than Netflix. Because, like, I don't know, a couple of months ago, they were saying it's going to be 2024. And then, like, 3 weeks later, they're like, no, it's going to be 2022. And then a week later, it's like, no, it's going to be, I don't know, Thursday. It's hilarious. They keep defying expectations at every turn. And it's funny to me to see the analysts try to not overpredict. They don't want to overpredict. They don't want to make a prediction that's, I don't know, not borne out in the time frame they state. But yeah, Disney Plus is a juggernaut. So I think the point of that rambling diatribe was, I think they're gonna make their own rules. I think they're gonna decide what they're gonna do, and it's gonna be up to everybody else to go, well, we either follow the leader because they're the 800-pound gorilla, or maybe we can't pull it off. I don't know.
Well, somewhat related to that, and I know this is pure guesswork, but what happens to movie theaters now? Do they stand a chance in large numbers going forward?
Would it seem crass of me to answer that by saying, I don't care? I don't know, at this point, to me, commercial sentiments are irrelevant, at least in terms of my life. We can speculate about society as a whole, but I just don't care.
I still do enjoy that experience, but it's, for me, it's for marquee films. There is something about that communal experience on opening night where you're with 300-400 people who were into that experience as much as you are. And even sitting at home with your family and a few friends, it's not the same thing. But I think that it's really hard to see the family going to the movie theater week in and week out the way they used to, paying that kind of money for that experience that isn't the tentpole feature. It's really hard to see theaters recovering to any state that they were. Again, though, kind of similar to Dennis in a way, we don't really live anywhere near a marquee theater. If I lived within 30 minutes of a Dolby Cinema, I think I would probably go to more movies, but I don't think I live within 300 miles of one. So I feel like they're going to have to do something to entice people back now that people have gotten used to watching it at home for so much less money, for so much more comfort and convenience. But
and on bigger and bigger screens.
Well, again, though, you know, you get the biggest screen you want. It's not going to compare to a theatrical Dolby Vision screen.
But does that matter to most people? I mean, I know we're talking about the best possible quality, but I think as screens get bigger and bigger at home, it gets harder for the middle market to justify going to a theater.
And I do. That's why I think that maybe it's going to turn into this event thing. But obviously, the theaters can't survive just being an event location. You know, they can't survive on those six movies a year.
But again, Disney does most of those event movies.
Well, I don't know. Look at The Quiet Place 2 has done spectacularly well.
Yeah.
I think you're going to see that with Top Gun too. I think there are certain movies that are non-Disney that are huge titles that people still want to go and see. Right. But again, the theaters can't survive on those six movies a year, especially let's say it's three movies a year that aren't Disney or whatever. So I don't know, will they find a way to, maybe they'll do like live concert streaming? Would I go and pay $20 to go to the movie theater and watch a live Taylor Swift show or, you know, a live Broadway show or something? You know, maybe they'll have to find ways of being different with that space.
I feel kind of similarly, except for me, it wouldn't be a Dolby Vision screen. I'm about 2.5 hours away from one of those. But for me, if I had an Alamo Draft House close by, I would probably go to the movies more. And the reason for that is if you scratch your chin too loudly, they don't just throw you out, they ban you for life. That would get me back into a movie theater. Just people going in the door know, hey, I'm running the risk of being thrown out forever and not being able to come back. That might entice me back to the movies. Because, you know, the biggest screen and the best sound system in the world to me is pointless if I've got somebody's unruly kid kicking me in the back of the seat. And most movie theaters won't do anything about that. You go and complain and they come in and they go, no, no. And that's it. That's all they do. And I agree with Sartre, you know, hell is other people, especially when I'm watching a movie. And that's the thing that kills the experience.
Yeah. Yeah. Well, let's be honest. The theaters sort of did that to themselves as far as not creating a more conducive experience until they had to scramble and find a way to make it happen. You know?
Yeah. Yeah.
Anyways, I need to try to wrap this up soon. And is anybody game to just briefly do a postmortem on the Oscars, since we didn't get a chance to talk about it at the time?
Did they do the Oscars this year?
We watched it just because I think, you know, it's a habit that we've gotten into. Although I felt like repeatedly it was movies I hadn't even heard of, it seemed like.
Yeah.
So it was easy to root for the one or two that we had actually seen. And the one or two that we had seen actually did really well. Soul did well, and Nomadland did well. But it felt like you were just watching them going through the motions. And I thought that the show itself was just, I don't know, a little bizarre. But I don't know, it feels like it was totally irrelevant this year. And it was just, you know, they were going through the motions of it. You know, at some point, you've got to get back to normalcy. I mean, I think that just sometimes, even if they knew it wasn't going to be great, I think they're just trying to find a way back to normalcy.
No, I get that, but I think it's an indicator. Yes, the pandemic had a lot to do with it, but I think there's also the factor of they haven't figured out how to adequately account for streaming. And that's just going to become a bigger and bigger factor going forward. And one of the things I was talking to Dennis about is a lot of streaming series now are almost interchangeable with movies. Where do you draw that line? How do you adequately account for a series that's almost, or is as good as a movie? Who gets that award? Is that an Emmy?
Yeah. It's a blurry and increasingly meaningless distinction for me because, you know, Falcon and the Winter Soldier was a cinematic experience that played out in six parts. And, you know, you drop anybody who didn't know, you know, just say somebody's been, in cryo sleep for the past 5 years and you pull them out and you set them down in front of 10 or 15 minutes worth of Falcon and the Winter Soldier. And they would swear to you that they're watching the new Marvel movie, you know, that in terms of the moment to moment experience and the overall story structure, it was a cinematic experience that played out in six parts. And I think that was one case where the sort of Disney's week to week release schedule actually hurt that property, you know, that's something that you should have been able to sort of watch over the course of a weekend or whatever. Not 6 weeks, but yeah, the lines are blurring, man. And I, you know, here's the thing. I honestly think most people just don't care. I think the reality is for most of our lives, for most of the 20th century, whatever, we had this perception that, oh, films, cinema, that's this lofty experience. And it's a certain level and TV is just sort of a cheap stand-in. Well, we're getting to the point to where that's just not true anymore. And so I just don't think it matters to most people. You know, do you call The Falcon and the Winter Soldier a film in six parts or do you call it a TV show? I don't think people care.
Yeah, you know what? And as the Emmys and the Oscars, as they continue to lose interest in viewership, maybe they combine and maybe it doesn't matter. You know, maybe there's new categories or maybe, you know, maybe it's just all combined together. Maybe they give, you know, two awards, best actor in a singular film and best actor in an episodic event. You know, again, really, I think Dennis is right though. I don't think people care. What award did it get? It's just a label.
Yeah. And a purely practical level though, and I don't want to open this can of worms, is just consider the number of streaming services and how much content's being produced now. How do you even begin to adequately acknowledge everything that's out there?
Well, again, there's a lot of stuff on there that doesn't need any acknowledgement whatsoever. So I think that it might kind of just help to police itself. So I'm not sure that we're quite there yet where you have to worry about how to cull it down to the best stuff.
Anyway, any closing thoughts? Anybody? I mean, my thing is, I don't think I could have predicted most of this 2 years ago when we were having those Game of Thrones conversations.
No, that's true. That's true. I guess my closing thought would just be to recap what I've already said and encourage people who sort of locked into this paradigm of believing that streaming is automatically an inferior experience in terms of AV. Don't get locked into your truisms, man. Like, take these things on a case-by-case basis. More bits does not always equal better. At some point, you reach diminishing returns, and a streaming experience can deliver something that is truly reference quality. Doesn't mean as always does, of course. It just means it can. And I think people get locked into their dogmas. Well, you got to let those go because the world is changing at an ever-increasing rate. So be cognizant of that. Let go of your biases and just take each film experience for what it is on its own and judge it by its merits.
Well, I think too, you know, kind of added to that, at this point, if you're not willing to embrace streaming on some level, you're going to be missing out on some of the best content that there is. You know, there's some things out there that the only way that you're going to get to see them. More and more studios are getting away from physical releases, period. So streaming is going to be the only way to see it. So, you know, avoid it at your own peril, I guess. And, you know, for a long time, it's about the quality of the programming. Survivor, I'm a big fan, no matter what you think, how garbage it is, whatever. We're fans of the show. I'm going to watch it if it's staticky and black and white, and that's all that I can pull in. I'm going to watch it. And if the content is good, if it's something that you enjoy, if there is the occasional blip or hiccup or whatever, but that's the only way that you're going to be able to get it. You know, content is still king. And streaming is the way to get the content now. So, you know, there's lots of great ways to see it. It's only going to get better. But, you know, inevitably, that is the future of how we're going to be getting programming entertainment.
I think the ultimate point is it's not inherently compromised anymore.
And it's only getting better. I mean,
yeah. Okay.
You know, one thing we didn't mention, and just kind of, I know we're at the very end of this, and I don't think any of us had any experience with it yet, is Sony's new service, Bravia Core, which certainly points, you know, toward where this is going to go. You know, Sony is saying with Bravia Core that they're going to be able to deliver 100 megabit per second streams. I mean, so now we have a streaming service that can deliver data rates on parity with a 4K disc. Mm-hmm. So I don't know that Dennis has had any experience with it yet. I'm waiting on a TV to come in that it's going to supposed to be Bravia Core capable. And, you know, from what I've heard, again, it's really hard to get any information on it. I believe this is a free thing as well, to, you know, again, a way for Sony to entice people to buy their televisions. But this certainly points toward, okay, you know, it's possible to deliver as you get these higher internet download speeds. There's no limit to the data rate that they can push through the pipe if the pipe is capable. So, you know, that again is certainly a glimpse into where it can go and is going.
Dennis, any quick thoughts on that?
Well, no, I think I'm about as familiar with the service as Siaka is, in that it's really hard to get any information about it. But, you know, it could go a long way toward being a pacifier for the people who are obsessed with bit rates, which I'm not. But yeah, is it the future? I'm not sure. Is it an interesting talking point for this moment in time? I think so.
Okay. I think we're good. I think we covered plenty of ground.
I think so too.
I just don't think we should do these on Monday mornings anymore. This ended up being a far more sober conversation than I expected.
Oh, yeah.
Anyway, I'm going to stop recording.